Today's episode of The Overwhelmed Brain is brought to you by GetOutOfTheMess.com. Let Asha, your independent Legal Shield associate, connect you with legal services and support for a low monthly rate.
Are you annoyed by affirmations? Are you tired of that same old, rehashed personal growth advice that all seems to boil down to, think positively and all your problems will go away? If affirmations feel like lies and positive thinking feels like denial, then I want you to get ready. The Overwhelmed Brain is here to help you create the life you want now.
Hello and welcome to The Overwhelmed Brain. I am Paul Coliani, personal empowerment coach, and this is the show where I read your questions and help you tackle life's toughest challenges. I want to help you increase your emotional intelligence, strengthen your self-worth and self-esteem, and empower you so that you can make decisions that are right for you. Everything I talk about on this show is my personal opinion and is meant for informational and educational purposes only. Always consult a medical or psychological professional before making any changes that could affect your physical or mental health. And just want to say hi. Thanks for tuning in. If you've never heard the show, this is what it's all about, everything I just described. I want to help you increase your emotional intelligence, strengthen your self-worth and self-esteem, and most importantly, and I know I'm repeating myself, help you make decisions that are right for you, that work for you, that give you the empowering feeling to make a decision, to stick with it, to go with it, and make things happen in your life. And, you know, I've been stuck in the past. You've probably been stuck. You may be stuck now where, you know, you're thinking, what should I decide? Which direction should I go? What should I do in this situation or with my life? Or how about I'm in this relationship and I don't know how to get out of it? Or if not that, I'm in this relationship and I don't want to leave it, but I want it to improve. Or I'm in this relationship, so on and so forth. Any relationship, it could be I'm in this job, I'm in this family, I'm in this marriage, and I don't know what to do. So this show helps to improve, I don't want to say improve, enhance, help you improve yourself, maybe, to get to a point where you can be in alignment with your values. You can be in alignment with your integrity, with your true, genuine nature, and make decisions from that place. That's what I want for you. I want you to be able to make decisions from that place instead of worrying about, well, what does society expect me to do? What does my husband or my wife or my girlfriend or my boyfriend expect me to do? Not that those things aren't important, but that you play a role too. And in fact, I like to look at you play the primary role. What do I want for me? What's important to me? And then you consider the secondary role, the secondary component of your decision-making process. So if you, I can't think of a good example. If you wanted to, I don't know, drive a sports car and someone said, you can't drive a sports car, they're so dangerous. Or even, how about this? This is a better example. You want to get a motorcycle. A lot of people have a problem with motorcycles. I don't have a problem with motorcycles. I'm saying that a lot of people have a problem in the sense that they don't want their honey to get a motorcycle because it's so dangerous and you're going to get killed and the statistics are high that, you know, if you crash, you're going to die. So all this fear around someone getting a motorcycle. So you're going to have all these opinions and judgments. And if you want to get a motorcycle and that's very important to you, and you have all these fears and judgments and opinions, now you're in that place of, well, I guess I can't do what I want to do for me. And what does that do to you inside when I say that? I can't do something that I want to do for me because so-and-so says it's dangerous, because they don't like it, because they don't want me to die. I mean, there are valid reasons. But what does it do to you inside if you want to do something with your life? If you want to make a decision for you, what do you do when you have so many factors against you? I really want a motorcycle. I really want to go on this fishing trip. I really want to go, you know, for a spa day, but I know we don't have enough money. You know, I'm trying to cover men and women here. I really want to join this group, but I know that my wife or my husband will be against it. I really want to go bowling every Wednesday. And whoever it is, what comes up for you when you realize, but they won't like it. So-and-so won't like it. And so I'll just keep doing what I'm doing, keep trudging along, and hopefully enjoy the rest of my life. To me, that like takes something away. It pulls some passion out of me. It pulls some motivation or happiness. It pulls motivation to continue doing what I'm doing with any level of enthusiasm. It takes motivation out for me to even seek something to do. Well, I can't do that, so I guess I'll just do what I do. This happens. I mean, if it hasn't happened to you yet, it probably will, sorry to say, but probably it already has. There's something in life that has happened to you that you are now in this place of, well, I guess I'll just keep doing what I'm supposed to do. I don't like that feeling. I don't think you do either. And when I try this on myself, you know, what is holding me back from being happy? What is holding me back from feeling this passion? You know, it's interesting. My friend and fellow coach and fellow podcaster, you've probably heard him if you've heard the show before, Matthew Bivens. He does the Having It All podcast. We've done a few episodes together on the Overwhelmed Brain feed. If you're subscribed to this podcast, you can hear it. But several episodes together, and we have great conversations. And I don't know if I'm supposed to say this, but we're making a new show. It's not going to be on the Overwhelmed Brain. It's not going to be on his feed. It's going to be on its own feed. It's going to be a new show. We've recorded a couple episodes so far, and I'm not going to tell you too much about it, but let's just say that it's raw. It's more, I don't want to say authentic, because I feel like I'm authentic here, but let's just say it's more personal. It's more connecting. It's also more revealing, in the sense that we're having raw, revealing, sometimes very surprising and sometimes shocking conversations that I wouldn't normally have on this, you know, this kind of show. So be on the lookout for a show coming out from the both of us. That's experimental right now, but we're going to release it. But anyway, the reason I brought that up is because we just recorded, when was it, 2 days ago, and what we recorded was something on, you know, losing your passion. It wasn't the whole subject of the show, but it came up. Like, why am I not passionate about anything? And that wasn't what it was for me, but that's how people get. It's like, when you lose your passion, what does that mean? You know, or like Matthew said in the show, he goes, we're always told to follow our passion and the money will come. And we called, you know, BS on that. We just don't like this attitude that is out there. Because there are certain factors involved. And what if you don't feel the passion? What if you don't know what your passion's about? So we had that conversation. It was a great conversation. And it got into some other things. And it's a show that explores and allows us to explore our own stuff. I mean, our own stuff comes up during the recording. And that's what I love about doing this show, is my own stuff comes up. Just like when you're talking to somebody and they ask you a question like, so how's your marriage? And suddenly your own stuff comes up. Or, you know, did you talk to your mom lately? Oh, so my own stuff comes up. So I love when our stuff comes up, because it's an opportunity to address it, to process it, to talk about it, to even maybe release it. That's usually the hard part, but that's the goal. When the stuff comes up, let's release it. So, you know, Matthew and I had this talk about passion and where we get our passion. What do we do with our passion when we get it? What do we do when we don't have it? So anyway, back to the idea that you feel stuck and you're not sure, you know, what steps to take next. And you'd really like to feel fulfilled, but you have all these people around you that aren't in agreement with what you want to do with your life, or might have something or a problem with it. And, you know, I'm talking within reason. If you want to be a polygamist and you're married to someone who wants monogamy, that's not within reason. You're not going to be able to break the bounds of that relationship very easily. I'm talking about if you want a motorcycle. I'm talking about you can really access personally something that you want for you, and it just doesn't seem to be an acceptable thing to other people. What'll happen is that when you don't do that for yourself, when you can't do that for yourself, guess what happens to passion? Passion starts to diminish. Passion starts to dissolve. And you start to lose it. You start to lose the enthusiasm and the motivation, because what you really want to do in life, even small things that you know someone else is against or doesn't like, those little things are liberties being taken away from you. And when they're taken away over time, you don't really sense that things are missing in your life. Well, you might, but you end up feeling less and less you. You end up feeling less and less fulfilled. You want more for yourself, but you have made these compromises or sacrifices for other people because you know it won't please them. So you've made compromises to keep certain aspects of your life cohesive. So if you're in a relationship and you want to keep that relationship, you know you fill in the blank. You know you can't get a motorcycle. You know you can't do this, you can't do that. And that has an effect on you. It has an effect on the relationship too. Because guess what? You're not bringing your happiest, most fulfilled self into the relationship because you're not really fulfilling yourself. You're doing the best you can to fulfill yourself with other things, but now you have a partner or someone else in your life that doesn't have the same values, that doesn't have the same vision for the future, that doesn't want you to do certain things for the sake of a bigger picture. And maybe you agree with that bigger picture, so you succumb, you submit, and you bring yourself back to a space of, well, I guess I can't do that. I'm not saying that there is a big time solution for this. I'm not saying that you can just go out and do anything you want and hope the world works out the way it's supposed to work out. That is a plan. You could do that for sure, but I don't think that's necessarily a good plan for good relationships. At the same time, I do believe that when you have people in your life that will support your decisions, even if they disagree with your decisions, that you bring a happier, more fulfilled you into that relationship. And when you can bring that happier, more fulfilled you into a relationship, guess what type of relationship blossoms from that? There's something to this. When you are with someone that says, you know, I'm just going to use this example. When you're with someone who, say, wants to get a motorcycle, and you don't want them to have a motorcycle, or vice versa, you want to get a motorcycle. This may not resonate with everyone, but I'm going to use it anyway. The thought that someone wants to do something that they want to do, even though there's risk, even though there is something that the other person won't like, what would happen if the other person decided to say, you know what, I don't like it, but I want you to be happy. I really do. And it scares the crap out of me that you want to do that. But I don't feel like I should be the one to hold you back from that happiness. And when they do this, you know, what would happen to them? Would their face brighten up? Would they suddenly feel like more connected to you? Would they suddenly feel like being more intimate with you? The reason I say that is because our next segment is about connection and intimacy and empathy. But this is one of those doors that you can open with people to connect with them. One of those doors that really, you know, really dives down into their soul. If I had this driving need to get a motorcycle and my partner's like, I just don't want you to do it. I'm just so scared. You know, you're going to leave our children fatherless. And you put all this negative energy toward it. I'm not saying it's a bad thing. And I'm not saying I agree or disagree with any of this. There's a cohesiveness to the relationship that needs to continue, that it may not. It may cause a rift in the relationship if you do something your partner doesn't want, or someone else, your family, coworkers, boss, whatever, doesn't want, because it's very personal to you and it's against what they want. So you do create conflict sometimes when you go for your own stuff, when you want to pursue your own passions, your own dreams. My point in this segment is to tell you that if you're not feeling passion, if you're not feeling connection with certain people in your life or close people in your life, if you're not feeling that, then what are you withholding in you? What are you preventing yourself from doing that keeps you in the space of suppression? If you feel suppressed and you're not able to move forward in life and you're just living, not living life, but just living it, moving on, next day, then what is being suppressed in you? And so there's something there to explore. And it's a great conversation to have with the people in your life. The problem is a lot of people want to put their values onto you, want to put their big vision for your future onto you. It's not a bad thing. I'm not saying that's a bad thing. I mean, I feel the same way. I want my vision of my girlfriend and I's future to end up the way I want it. I also want to support her, which is why when she wants to do things that I'm not necessarily crazy about, I'm going to do them. She wants to spend more time with her son, and that sometimes takes up entire weekends and long drives and camping in not so great conditions. And I will do them, not because I love camping and I love the hot sun. I love her son. I support her son. But certainly there are decisions that I could make that wouldn't support that path, but because I want her to be fulfilled, then I want to support her path. And she recognizes this. She sees this. She is so grateful for this, that I do this, even though there are 100 other things that I could think of to do on a weekend. So my path is to support her. And this works in reverse too. Her path supports me, because when I made that trip to Indiana just this last weekend that went by, she didn't complain. She was like, oh, you want to take a 10-hour drive to Indiana and sleep overnight a couple nights in a tent at this music festival? She wasn't crazy about it, but she also realized that she was supporting me in that endeavor. And she wasn't going to say anything against it. She was definitely supporting it. And she wasn't really looking forward to it, I could tell. But when we got there, she had a great time. And she may have had a better time than I did, but she really enjoyed it, appreciated it, because she was able to really get on board with my fulfillment, what motivated me, my enthusiasm, and ride that wave. And doing it has been a great experience. And doing that was a great experience for both of us. And we both left with some really good life lessons and music gear, of course, and spiritual lessons too. I mean, there was a big spiritual lesson that she went through that really changed her in many ways. So by supporting someone's path, it's possible that you riding their wave is going to uplift you in many ways. I think it's probable. I think it's probable that by supporting someone else's path, it will uplift you. If anything, for the fact that they will probably be happier and more fulfilled. And what greater feeling is it to be with someone who's happy and fulfilled and wants to be with you? That's a really good feeling, at least when I try it on. So that's why I talk about this, and hopefully it resonates with you, and maybe you can take this with you into any relationship that you're in. I know it's not easy. There are things that people want to do that we may not agree with, that we know are dangerous, that we know that we would never do ourselves. Yet how do they talk about it? How do they feel about it? What do they want to do with their lives? Honey, I want to build an arcade in our basement. What? Our basement? We're using that for laundry. Yes, but I want to build an arcade. And they're so excited about it. And you go, no, that's not going to happen. And they just go, okay, you're right. I'll move on with my life. And you can see all that energy zapped out of them. I'm not saying that you should give in every time. There are things to talk about. But you can tell where someone goes and where they stay. And from that point on, I mean, years later, they may not even remember asking that question. But there's just something different about them. They're not as happy as they could be or connected to you as they could be. And you have to wonder, why is that? What did we talk about in the past that really deflated their sales? What was going on years ago that may have contributed to this? These are good things to bring up, to talk about, and maybe even, I don't want to use the word give in to, but at least be a little more lenient. Not saying this is the solution, I'm just saying, what can be brought up again for discussion that might possibly fulfill them in some way that they've not felt in so long? Might be fun to talk about, might be scary to talk about, but maybe worth talking about. We'll be right back after this. Just a quick message about getoutofthemess.com. Asha is an independent Legal Shield associate, and she helps connect you with a service, Legal Shield, that acts as sort of like a legal advice line. And it's much more than that, but I've used it myself. We use it all the time as a legal advice line just to get our questions answered without having to pay the, you know, sometimes exorbitant costs that an attorney can charge. So it's nice to have this low monthly payment that all we need to do is pick up the phone and ask a question. I mean, you have to get a ticket written and all that, and they call you right back. But the idea is just so that you can have an actual attorney call you back in your state. This is only for the U.S. and Canada, so I say state as in that. Or it could be province, so that's in Canada too. But having access to someone who knows the law and can answer a specific question for you gives you the feeling that you're really backed up if you ever need them. You know, my girlfriend and I have a monthly subscription to this. She's been using it for like 7 or 8 years. I've been using it for the last 3 years, and I've used it several times, and it has been great. I mean, I use it for my business. I use it for personal use, and just to be able to ask a lawyer anything gives me peace of mind, and I want you to have that peace of mind. I want you to go to getoutofthemess.com. You can see what the services are, see if it's going to work for you. And of course, ask Asha if you have any questions on what this is and how it can help you by calling 678-355-8777. GetOutOfTheMess.com. All right, like I said, we're going to talk about intimacy and connection and empathy in this segment. And it starts with this email I received from someone I'm going to call Mike. And Mike says, what does Mike say? Where is he? There he is. Several months ago, I came across your book, The Overwhelmed Brain. I took a sick day, more like a mental health day, and read the book. There was a lot of great content in there, and it really spoke to me. I was happy to learn of your podcast, and although I had never listened to one before, I figured this was a good place to start. So I appreciate what you're doing and your sincere interest in helping others break out of whatever is holding them back. Thank you, Mike. Thanks for buying the book. I don't really talk about it too much, but yes, there's a book called The Overwhelmed Brain, Personal Growth for Critical Thinkers, and Mike discovered the show through that book, so I'm glad you tuned in, and I'm glad I was your first foray into the podcast world. So Mike goes on, a couple of years ago, I started to realize that I've been trying to make myself happy with the wrong things. Whether it's through drinking, consumerism, or simply distracting myself with an insignificant task, I had not been addressing something that was very wrong. There are a series of things that I'd like to do better and improve upon. My career choice, where I live to support the right hobbies, etc. None of those things are frightening to me, and I'm okay with making changes. There's one thing that I was afraid to even look at, however. But ultimately, I gave myself permission to look at it, which is my marriage. I'm in my 30s and I've been with the same woman for over a decade. We began dating when I was in my early 20s. We've done extraordinarily well together. We've worked through a lot and some things we could have certainly done differently. I'm an incredibly critical thinker, and when you describe peeling back the layers, oh, do I know that concept too well. Anyway, things have been tough. We've been in purgatory, and my wife and I are both needing to get to our next chapter, whatever it may be. My wife and I have a lot of similarities in the practical front, and have agreed on many things about what's right and wrong, and why. But after peeling back all those layers, I'm hung up on one thing. I think that all the stuff that's taken place that's been undesirable may have just never taken place if we respected each other to the highest degree. In order for that to be possible, I believe there's a level of true, genuine empathy that lays the foundation. Can that be learned? Or is it there or not? I love my wife. She is a genuine and integral person in my life, but there's something missing. If you're able to share your ideas on intimacy, that would be incredibly helpful. We have not had sex in almost 2 years, and it was very infrequent before that. There are no issues with physical attraction or health keeping us back. It's me. I don't feel the kind of connection that I desire. We grew up differently. We had different backgrounds and different upbringings. Anyway, as much fun as we've had, getting along well, etc., we've never had the most in-depth conversations that help establish intimacy and closeness. I can talk, she can listen, but the thoughts are never reciprocated, and I feel like we don't really connect. It's caused me to feel lonely, and I'm interested in learning more about life and others' perspective and how it all works, not just watch TV. I'm interested in your thoughts on the subject. My wife thinks the intimacy problem can be fixed through physical contact, but for me, it's the other way around. Thank you for your time, Mike. Thank you, Mike. Thank you for sharing this, and I can tell you're a very critical thinker, at least on the analytical front, just by the way you wrote this message. It's not a dig against you. I'm just saying I'm pretty good at analyzing people's words and figuring out where they're coming from. So I can tell that there's a lot of analyzation in your processing and the way you process. And yes, people are sometimes in an upbringing where we're told not to access our emotions, or we're not shown how to do it. Or, I really shouldn't say that, we're actually prevented from doing it because we're born emotional creatures. You're not born as a critical thinker. You're born as an emotional creature. You get hungry, you cry, there's some pain. You hurt yourself, you cry, there's some pain. Somebody blows bubbles, I mean, this is when you're an infant or older. Somebody blows bubbles and you're laughing. And there's access to those emotions. Then we get a little older and we cry. And when we're in a, how do I say this, dysfunctional family? I don't want to say that because I don't want to call every family that does this dysfunctional, but this is a problem, is that some parents will say, you shouldn't cry. And some kids will take that on and do it permanently. And when you do something over and over again, resist the emotions inside of you, what happens is that those neural pathways start to dig those deep grooves of a pattern, and then that's all you know. And then the neurons can't get out of the groove. I'm simplifying it, I know, but you get the point. Those neurons now have this deep groove, the same pattern plays over and over again, the same program, and then you grow up not knowing how to access whatever, empathy, sympathy, compassion, feelings. I'm not saying you're all of these things, but some people may not have access to this stuff. And it's not necessarily their fault, and it's not necessarily your fault. I mean, it sounds like you want to access this. You ask the question, is this something I can develop? Is this something I can learn? Am I stuck being this way? In my personal opinion, I don't believe you're stuck. I believe that anyone can access and start feeling empathetic. I've worked with clients that really didn't feel empathy and slowly started feeling empathy. It's not an easy process when you've been programmed since whatever, 2 years old, birth, to not experience or connect with your emotions, but it can be done. Just like if you've never ridden a bike, it doesn't mean you can't get on a bike and start to learn. The new neural pathways can be created. So there is also the question of that part of the brain developing. This is over my head, but I'm going to talk about it a little bit. The part of the brain that connects with your emotions, with empathy and things like that, if it's not worked out often, it may not have enough oomph to help you there. It may not be completely fleshed out. Just like if you are a very auditory person, the auditory cortex in your brain is probably going to be thriving. Lots of blood flow. It's probably bigger than some other people. I don't know. Again, I don't know the science behind this, but that's the idea, is that what you work out in your brain is what becomes the thriving part of the brain that really helps you move forward in that direction, in that area. Just like blind people, when they look at a blind person's visual cortex, it's not as active. It's not thriving. I think it's still there, but it's just used for other processes. Like there's more auditory processes, there's more kinesthetic processes, and the visual cortex ends up doing other functions. If I'm wrong about that, just let me know, but I believe that's how it works. The idea that maybe your, I think it's the prefrontal cortex that takes care of emotion and feelings and things like that. If that's not used and you're always finding a way to bypass that, then it's quite possible that that part of the brain doesn't thrive as well. Doesn't mean it's not there, and it doesn't mean it's not possible. From what I understand, it's just a matter of, okay, let's connect with it and start to build it. I think that's your question, is what can I do to connect with this? What can I do so that my wife and I can be more intimate, more connected? A, listen to the first segment of this show. And B, this is one thing that I've been kind of going through in my own head. Because I've not ever experienced a place of no empathy or connection. From a people pleaser's point of view, when I was growing up, I was a big people pleaser. And being a people pleaser, we carry around a lot of empathy. Because what we're doing is always trying to fulfill the needs of other people. How do you do that? You become sensitive to their needs. You contemplate what they need. And then you try to fulfill that need. That's what people pleasers, a lot of them do, is that we try to fulfill the needs of others so that they're happy. And that does involve empathy. The problem with people pleasing is it usually does so at the detriment to ourselves. So we start to get burnt out trying to please others, trying to contemplate their needs, trying to always be there for them. And we're never there for us. We are, but sometimes it just doesn't work out because we have so much energy going into someone else and we forget that we come first. I mean, there are exceptions, but most of the time we should come first because we don't want to give away our energy. We want to have some left over for others, meaning we take care of ourselves first and then we take care of others so we have that energy to do so. It's like, do you really love someone if you don't love yourself enough to have enough love left over for them? That's a philosophical debate we can talk about sometime, but you get where I'm going with that. It's self-fulfillment. It is just having enough energy for you. But, let's talk about you, Mike. I hear your struggle here. 2 years, no sex with your wife. That's a problem. In my opinion, that's a problem. I think that if there's no physical issues, there's no attraction issues, and there's no sex, then let me refer to my first segment. What is missing in your life? Now, I asked that question and I paused, just like that, so you can think about it. What is missing in your life? Well, nothing's missing. I got this great marriage. I have enough money. I have this. I have this. I mean, maybe that comes up for you, or maybe something else. And if you can't necessarily answer that question, I like to do it this way. You've probably heard me do this before if you've listened. You wake up tomorrow and everyone you know is gone. You're in a new town. You have the money. That's no problem. But there's nobody around. I usually do this where you wake up and everyone is gone, like the whole earth. All humanity is gone. But let's just say that everyone that you know is gone. I don't know where they went. I don't know if they died. I don't know if they took off on a spaceship. They're just gone. And now you have no one left in your life to influence your thoughts, to influence your decisions. All you have is this, I hate to say, clean slate. Now you can start making new friendships, start making new relationships if you want. But everyone you know is gone. What do you do? What would you do? Maybe the first few days you'd be searching for them. I get that. You know, try this on as a meditation. Maybe after a week or two, you realize, wow, I can't reach anyone. Then what? Eventually, you're going to come into a place of, wow, I can really do anything I want. I can do anything. So now you have this freedom to do anything you want. What comes to mind? Is there something you've always wanted to do? Do you just want to take time to yourself and, you know, go to the beach, go to the library? Do you want to go shopping? I don't know. What do you want to do? If you answer something, how much of that something are you doing in your life today? In the situation, in your marriage, how much of that something are you doing in your life today? How much of that is in your life, and are you doing it enough? That's why I'm asking this question. You woke up, everyone you know is gone, and now you have the opportunity to do anything you'd like. Well, I might crank my stereo loud so I can really jam out. I can't do that at home because my wife might say something. I'm not saying anything against your wife. I'm not saying that at all. I'm saying that sometimes we hold ourselves back out of respect for other people. And that's a great thing to do. I love that. But let's just explore that. If these people weren't in your life, what would you do then? So this is a good question to ponder upon and get an idea of where you go with that. Because when no one else is in your life, the things that come to mind about what you do are often the things that you aren't doing today or enough of today, or feel restricted in doing because of certain people in your life not liking that or not appreciating it as much as you. So think about that. And if you answered the question, I don't know what I would do, then this is your opportunity to explore that by meditating. It's sort of like when I talk about when you're in a toxic relationship with someone and you have all these dependencies or attachments to them. And every time they say something, you get upset and they trigger you. I suggest, you know, in your mind's eye, when you're not with them, what would happen if they died? And again, this is a visualization. What would happen if they died? Okay, if they died, oh my God, I get the phone call and so-and-so says they died and how would you respond to that? Would you say, oh my God, how, when, what happened? You actually go through the entire process. You hang up the phone. What would you do next? What would you do that night? Would you be able to sleep? What would you do in the morning? Now you have to get prepared for the funeral. What would you do in a week? What would you do in a month? Where would you be? How would you feel? You go through that whole process as if it really happened. What I recommend you do with this visualization I told you about is waking up and everyone you know is gone. And what would happen next? What would you do on day one? What would you do on day five? What would you do on day 30? And what would you think? What would you feel? You go through that process because you may have a period of time where you don't know what you'd do, where you don't know what would make you happy, what would fulfill you. You may have that period of time. And this process of going through the days and the weeks and sometimes the months and maybe even the years will give you an idea of what you will eventually do. This may be hard. This may not be something that resolves things in your mind, but I just want you to be curious about what you do with that. Because what I'm trying to do is help you connect with the deeper part of yourself that is fulfilling. That doesn't necessarily have to make you happy or satisfied, but I like that word fulfillment. What fulfills you? Because the more you can connect with what fulfills you, the more you bring that fulfilled self into all of your relationships. And if you can show up fulfilled, then people can connect with you at that level, as opposed to showing up well, I'm doing, you know, everything I possibly am allowed to do. I'm doing everything that is within the boundaries of this relationship, within the boundaries of respecting each other. So it's, you know, it's I'm getting by. There's a difference. There's a different feeling for sure. And if you can connect with yourself deeper, at that deeper level, you're going to be able to access the connection to other people. Because it's hard to connect with other people if you're in a more, I don't want to say shallow, but you're not deep. If you're not in that deep connected place in yourself, then you're connected from another level, a more shallow, I guess, level of yourself to them. And the reason I want you to go there is because we quite often wear a mask, you know, in our relationships. We wear a mask to the world. This is what I want to show the world. And the other stuff, the deeper stuff, I'm not going to show them because of all these things, because of I'm afraid to be judged, or I'm doing so out of respect, or I know they won't like it, or people think I'm crazy. All of these things at the deeper level that we don't show the world. And so we suppress our thoughts and we repress our emotions around those things. And as we do that more and more over the years, we become more analytical. We become more, you know, critical thinking, and there's nothing wrong with either one of those. But when it's the primary process that takes place, instead of having an emotional response to things, we have an analytical response to things, then we tend to lose connection, not only with ourselves, but with other people. And then we think, hey, you know, life is fine. Everything's fine. I don't let things bother me because I'm on an even keel. I'm just very neutral about a lot of things. That's great in some situations, but when it comes to connecting with other people, you don't want to leave too much open to interpretation. And what I mean by that is, if you're so balanced in every situation that you don't go on any side of any fence, you never get angry, you never get upset, you never be joyously happy or ecstatic, then other people don't know exactly what excites you, what saddens you. Other people can't connect with you because you're not connecting with yourself. And I know that's the issue. I know that's what you're asking, Mike, that you are having trouble connecting with that part of yourself. So one of the things I want to leave you with is there's a lot more to talk about here, but I do want to say this. You do want to know your own values. You do want to know that it's okay to honor yourself and stand up for yourself, because you start doing that for yourself. If you start asking yourself what you really want to do with your life, and if revealing to people that you love what you don't like and what you don't accept and have chosen to accept out of respect or whatever, if you start revealing these things inside of you, you're going to bring up deeper conversations, first of all. And they may not always be easy. They may be hard conversations because you may say things that the other person doesn't like. But this is where the deeper connection comes in, is that even conflict and controversy can help you connect at a deeper emotional level. It may feel bad at first, but when you connect with that negative emotion inside of you, anything that you've been repressing, and you start talking about it, it gives you some sense of relief and release. Now, you may not be able to do this. You may be so disconnected that you have trouble doing this. This is why I'm giving you several options here to be able to connect with yourself so that you can connect with others, because that's my path. I encourage the path not to connect with others, but to go deeper within you. For example, when Matthew and I were recording the other day, we both agreed that we were going to take, we separate vehicles, take a quiet ride home. We weren't going to turn on the radio. We weren't going to get on our phones. And we wanted to know what it felt like to be in silence, because we are not big meditators. We don't go home and meditate every day. I don't go home and meditate every day. I thought I was a meditator. I thought I was meditating. I thought that just by being quiet in my head, it was meditation. The problem was I was filling in that quiet with watching videos on my tablet and listening to audio and going through my emails in a calm, peaceful state. I thought that was part of meditation. I was wrong. Meditation, to me, was allowing nothing outside of me to replace the quiet in my mind. Because what I was doing, I was in a quiet space, and I would just put something in that quiet space. When I don't do that, that feels like meditation. So, you know, yesterday I was washing the dishes in quiet. It was nice. I usually have something on my tablet, so I'm not so bored washing the dishes. But I practiced intentional quietness and did so without interruption and just stayed quiet. And when I did that, I did it for like 45 minutes, just doing different things. I just stayed quiet. When I did that, I was able to connect with myself in a way that I hadn't done before. And it felt really good. And I feel like an amateur talking about this because I know there are people listening. I get letters all the time saying, you know, I meditate, I do this. And I'm thinking, wow, I don't meditate, at least the way these other people do. And to be able to experience that and to understand why meditation was important was to experience that I spent a lot of time filling in the quiet in my mind. So I've been able to heal from a lot of things in my past, and that has helped me develop a quiet mind. But I never thought that it was also important to stop filling the quiet that's inside. And after I was quiet for like that 45 minutes, I went on the air and recorded a episode for the Patreon program. And I did so without stopping once, without having to edit, which is, that never happens to me. There's always several parts throughout every recording, including this one, where I have to go back and edit something out or change something. I did the whole thing, like 25 minutes long, just talking without an edit. And I attribute it to being quiet and allowing my brain and my subconscious mind to do whatever it does without interruption. Because things are happening in the background of your mind that, if you allow them to happen, can help you get to another state of mind, can help you develop new thoughts, new ideas, can help you clear things up. But we often don't allow our mind to do that because we're trying to fill the gap. We often don't want this gap of silence or this gap of staring off into nothingness. We try to fill it in because, like me, I can only speak for myself, I get bored. I'm in quiet, I'm getting bored. But what would happen if I was intentionally quiet? What would happen if that was my focus? Because before, I didn't really have a focus. I'm going to focus on quietness. I didn't have that focus. So creating that focus, and the reason I'm telling you this, creating that focus on not trying to fill in the gaps, not trying to ask yourself all these questions and figuring stuff out and trying to work things out in your mind and having that critical thought process go on and on and on, which can happen and does happen even during meditation. It does happen. But don't allow the outside world to interfere with what's going on inside, even if you can't stop the thoughts. I mean, this is just a practice. This is just a suggestion. But when you do this, when you don't allow the outside world to interfere or interject, and you just have that quietness, so you're not trying to intentionally fill in the gap, you might be surprised to find things come up for you that you didn't know were there. And that was the magic that I've learned just recently. I mean, I've meditated before. It's not like I've never done this. But to do so with such intention and with such purpose to not fill in the blank spots, to not fill in the silence, really changed how to meditate for me. So this is just an idea. If you want to try it, purposefully focus on not listening to anything, not trying to absorb things. Doesn't mean you can't walk around and, you know, do your chores, but being intentional about the quiet. Sometimes it's hard to do. Sometimes you have to take a walk. Sometimes you have to do it in the bathroom because you have no other choice because you have no time. That's fine too. But when you're in the quiet, what comes up? And it may take some practice, so give yourself some leniency. And we're going to take a quick break, and when we come back, I'm going to give you my final words and see where I can guide you with this. Be right back. All right, welcome back. And I'm reading the letter from Mike and about intimacy and emotional connection. Just as a reminder, I really think emotional connection with somebody else is learning to connect with yourself. This is the first place I go to when it comes to connecting with somebody else. And let me just zoom out a little bit and tell you why. Because if you're able to understand what you really feel inside and what's really going on inside and what your desires and wants and needs are, and you discover that they aren't being met, then you realize what you need. Then you realize where you are in your relationships. Because if you are going around with unfulfilled, unmet needs, then what are you getting from your relationships? So the idea that if you connect with yourself, you get to be more intimate. You might even feel empathy. That's one of those enigmas that some couples are dealing with, is that their partner doesn't feel empathetic toward them. And that's a huge thing. I mean, you have no idea how big that is. How many couples have reached out to me, or at least one partner in the couple, that say, my partner doesn't have empathy. And what do I do about it? And that is still a work in progress for me to help you through. If you're unable to connect with empathy in yourself, then I'm still working on a process to help you get there. So I don't have an immediate answer for that, quite frankly. But I do have the starting point, which is this episode, which is what I'm talking about here. And also, and I just told this to somebody through email, I said, why don't you get a hammer and smash your thumb? Why don't you experience the pain that will cause you to go, damn it, you know, because you're going to experience the emotions connected to that pain. I guarantee it. So if you don't feel empathy towards someone and they're experiencing a loss or pain, take something heavy and smash your thumb, and then you'll experience a pain. It's going to feel very real. And then tell yourself, this is what they're experiencing. And now you have empathy. You know, this is sarcastic. Certainly don't do that. But pain can be a path to empathizing with someone else. And I like to go in the space of loss. If you can think about something that if you lost it, it would devastate you, that's a great way to connect with someone else's loss. Someone loses a puppy, you can't relate, then think of something that if you lost it, it would devastate you. It doesn't matter if it's a person, an animal, or a material thing. If you've worked on your 1965 Mustang for 20 years and you finally got it restored and someone came along and stole it, how does that feel? You know, that is a feeling that would certainly, I mean, when I try it on, feel devastating. I worked on it for so long. Or anything that you've been working on, if you suddenly lost it. People have lost their houses in a fire after living there for years and years. That is certainly a loss that would be devastating, I'm sure, for most people. That's a great way to connect with loss. So empathy is one of those things that you may not be able to experience what they're experiencing in the context that they're experiencing. You know, someone goes through a divorce. You've never been through a divorce. You don't know what it's like. But what does that mean for them? That means they're experiencing a loss of someone they've had in their life for a long time. So who in your life, if you lost them, would be devastating? Your mom, your dad, your kid, I don't know. The idea is to connect with the underlying emotion. Again, I might have to have an entire episode or a workbook on connecting with your empathy, but this segment is really targeting Mike's particular issue with connecting with his wife. And I want you to get there, Mike. I want, you know, no sex for 2 years. You talked about how she thinks it's physical. You think it's emotional. I think that's what you said. And I'm here to tell you it's both. It's not just one or the other. If you want a long-term, fulfilling, romantic, everything, including sexual relationship with your partner, that you're going to find that emotional and physical connection are just as equally as important. And I found that an emotional connection, when you're really emotional connected and you're not holding on to emotional triggers, really gets the sexual, excuse the pun, juices flowing. The thought that you might have emotional triggers that you're holding on to, for many years, that's what held me back. That's what kept the sexual connection distant for me in some of my relationships, is not having that deeper emotional connection. So, you know, to a certain extent, you're right, Mike, that it does involve emotions and being connected, but it still has to start within you, finding that emotional connection with you, within you. And I know that's the challenge. I realize that that's probably where you're stuck. So I'm going to give you some final words. This is a much deeper topic than I have time to really get into and dive into today, but I'm hoping that some of this will be helpful to you. Let me just say this. One, I'm going to repeat, know what your values are. Know what's important to you. And are your values being met while in the relationship? It's good to, you know, think about what you value, what is important to you. And if those aren't being met, that diminishes passion and sometimes purpose and meaning and other enthusiasm and motivation in your body, in your soul, in your mind. That is diminishing when you aren't meeting those. So you need to be aware of those so that you know if you need to pursue them more. Because once you fulfill that in you, you can actually start connecting with yourself at a brighter level and bring in some of that brightness into your relationship so you have more connection. So there's one. Another one is standing up for yourself. Standing up for yourself in the way that if you get angry, it's okay to be angry and just say, you know what, I'm angry. And this is just a quick side story, but my sister and her husband, they've been together forever. And they used to really have these very, very, and I hope this is okay to say, very loud fights in our family home. I mean, they didn't care who was listening. They would yell back and forth. They're still together today. And I looked at those moments when I was young and I was in those moments. I was like, oh my God, this is crazy. How they are going to survive this relationship? They're just yelling back and forth. And I look at their relationship today and they're like one of the most stable couples I know. I don't know if they still yell back and forth. They probably do every now and then. But what I noticed is that they just got it out. They just put it out there. They didn't care if the other person left, divorced. I mean, this is my perception. They didn't care. My sister didn't care if her husband said, I want a divorce. It didn't matter because my sister wanted to get it out of her system. I don't think she was thinking of this at the time, but I saw this play out. And I look in hindsight and see what's playing out. And these two people, as much as they yelled back and forth, were reaching in at the deepest level and pulling out what was in there. And I look at that now and I think to myself, they must not be repressing anything. I mean, how wonderful it is to be able to get it out of your own system and you put it on the table and the other person can deal with it in their own way, but it's out. It doesn't stay in as a repressed emotional trigger to be triggered again in some future thing. It just gets out. So I don't know if that's exactly what was happening, but when I look at them today, they have challenges in their life. And because of the way they are, I think they get through those challenges and they're more stable than most couples because they're able to let this stuff out as hard as it can be. Because it's hard to tell someone what you really feel. I mean, if you tell someone that you know might say, I want a divorce, it's very difficult to say that, but you get it out of your system. And I've practiced this. I've been very forthcoming with information, very expressive of what's going on inside of me to a point where it surprised my girlfriend. But it has also helped her do the same with me. Because when we first met, she was repressing a lot. She wouldn't tell me things and it was really bothering me. And I'd be like, you know, I don't want to live with this stranger. I need to know what's in your system. Even if you have to say things that upset me and anger me, even at the risk of me leaving. And she goes, oh, I don't know if I can do that. I'm like, you're going to have to because I don't want to live with someone who holds anything back. And so she learned to do that. And I'm not taking credit for this. I'm just saying I made it safe enough for her to do that with me, even though what she might say might upset me. It could trigger me, but I didn't care. I wanted it out on the table. So that's my number two, is that it's not just standing up for yourself, but just saying what's on your mind, expressing it, even if there's risk involved, because there's no deeper connection you can make with someone than to give them the truth. to give them what specifically is going on in you. It doesn't mean you have to tell them every single thing that ever comes to mind all the time. It just means that if there's something weighing on you and it's a real trigger in you, it might need to come up. It might need to be open for discussion so that it doesn't stick in you. And there may not be a resolve to what you're talking about, but it needs to not be under the carpet and you're always tripping on it, if that makes sense. So number three is something I've already said, don't leave your emotions open to interpretation. Even if you don't feel emotional or you're not connecting with your emotions, don't filter what is happening inside of you through clever wording so that it sounds okay, so that it sounds logical, so that it sounds analytical. There's a big difference between saying, I'm experiencing some sort of bad feeling inside of me, and I know that it's just because I watched you leave the dish on the table and not take it to the sink, and that really activated something in me. I'm using a very filtered wording. Instead of just going, you just left the dish on the table, that really pisses me off. that's the total difference. And if you filter your words, what you're doing is rationalizing the emotion. I want you to be very careful how you rationalize your own emotions, because rationalizing your emotion invalidates yourself. Well, I see that she left that dish on the table, and that does upset me to an extent. You're rationalizing a single concept. That concept might be pissed off. I'm sorry if that word offends anyone, but if that's in there, it needs to come out. It needs to be expressed. It needs to come out in some way, shape, or form. If you don't want to use that word, use another word, but don't filter it so much where you're taking it out of the emotional envelope and putting it into a finely tuned, word-crafted letter. I don't want you to take out the emotion and put it in a filter to be expressed into the world. I want that emotion to come up. So this may be something you have to practice. That particular event was troubling to me. That's a lot different than saying, oh my God, when she did that, she was such a it really pissed me off. And these are the emotions that you access that we, some critical thinkers will tend to suppress. They don't want to think about those things. They don't want to feel those things because feeling them means that we're out of control. It's okay to be out of control, especially when it comes to emotions that you're either going to repress and feel bad for the rest of your life, or let them out, be out of control for a little bit. They get out and suddenly you feel lighter. And you don't have to carry it with you. You don't have to carry these things with you. I know, again, I'm simplifying, but this is the idea. I want you to get some of these concepts through your mind so that you don't feel like you have to filter and buffer and present something to the world that's not emotional, but it's more rational and logical. It is a difficult path to get out of that state of mind because that's where your brain goes. But I'm helping you understand that you have permission to express more, even at the risk that you might upset someone else. So number four, Mike, and everyone else that can resonate with this, is to remember that every decision you make and everything you do has an effect on other people. Even when it looks like they won't be bothered, having the thought that what I'm about to do will affect the other person in some way gives you a sense of empathy, even if it's a contrived empathy. Even if you don't even know how it affects them, you just have to know that it does affect them. So even me sitting in my office right now, recording this show, being away from my girlfriend, having this space to myself affects her. I mean, she might be happy. She's doing her own stuff and living her own life. But let's just say I did this every day, all day, and normally it isn't a problem, but one day it is. And so I have to be aware, you know, I like to do this. I like to observe her behavior. You know, you're one of these critical thinkers, right? Be critically minded of someone else's responses to you. If you want to learn empathy, learn how people respond to what you do. Be curious about their facial expressions. Be curious about the inflection in their voice. Be curious about their body language. Because there's a big difference between someone going, yeah, that's okay, you can do that. And, oh yeah, go ahead, go for it, honey. There's a big difference there. Yet a critical mind will hear, okay, she gave me permission. But the emotionally connected mind will hear, that didn't sound so congruent. You know, that didn't sound like someone who is really in alignment with what I'm doing. That sounded like someone who just was telling me it was okay, but didn't really feel it was okay. This may take some practice too, is being curious and even fascinated by other people's behavior in response to your behavior. If I walk out of this room and I go and meet my girlfriend and she gives me a funny look, I'll say, what's wrong? And she'll go, oh, nothing. I'll know that that's not the true answer because I can hear it in her voice. This takes practice, is to get out of your own stuff, get out of your own head, be very external, be very present for someone and hear where they are and see where they are without listening to their literal words. And what I mean by that is if you're a literal listener and you ask somebody a question and they say, yes, everything's fine, but they say it in a way that doesn't seem congruent where they said it was fine, but they didn't sound like it was fine because there's the difference. Yeah, everything's great. That sounds congruent as opposed to, yeah, everything's fine. Yeah, there's a little hesitation there. There's a little different inflection there. When you can tell the difference between both, you start to develop empathy because now you are connecting in a way that takes you out of your own head. You aren't in your own thought processes, in your own pattern, hearing the literal words, yes, everything's fine, continue. It could come at you in any way, yet you just take it that way. And I'm not saying you do this, Mike, but there are people that do this. They don't listen. When I hear, yeah, everything's fine, I'll go, oh, you know, it doesn't sound like everything's fine. I can hear a hesitation in your voice. I can tell something's not right. And then they'll go, oh, yeah, I've been thinking about something. And suddenly you have connection. Suddenly the person feels safer because you're understanding them and you are listening to them and you are observant of what they're going through. And they appreciate that typically. And they feel like they can share something with you because you actually care about what they're going through. This is a process. This is the beginning baby step for you to take. I think I'm going to give you number 5. One final thing that I want to tell you, Mike, is that a relationship like yours that hasn't experienced any sexual contact for the last 2 years probably needs something to spice it up. And I don't know if you have your friends and she has her friends. One of the things that I definitely endorse, definitely promote, is having one or more friends that you yourself can go meet up with every now and then and really be yourself, really be the man you want to be, really connect with your friends at a level that you wouldn't connect with your partner. I think that's important. I think when you can vent about your partner to other friends, if that's what's in you, that gives you some sense of release so you don't bring the pressure home. How do you release the pressure? How else do you go out and release the pressure? Do you have friends? Do you have hobbies? Do you get out of the house? Or do you isolate yourself with your partner or with the people that you're with most of the time? Or do you go out and vent and express and be silly and do things with other people that allow you to connect with yourself, that deeper part of yourself, and get that stuff out? I know you know what I mean. Because there's a difference in someone's personality when all they are is together all the time, let's just say as a couple, and those two people, they have one world, and it's each other. And that one world has its confines, has its structure, and they are within the confines of that structure, and their path is strewn with the purpose and the vision of that structure and the values of that structure. So it takes on a life of its own. But what happens when you take yourself out of that structure and you get to be someone else for a little bit with your friends? And I'm not saying you are someone else, but you get to express in a way that is outside the confines of the structure of that relationship. When you're able to do that, you're able to connect with yourself. Again, this is all about connecting with yourself. If you can connect at that deeper level and get some of that stuff that's so buried up and out of you, you can start forging paths to that emotional part of your brain and really connecting with yourself at that level so you can bring a happier, more fulfilled you home. There's so much more I want to talk about here, but I don't have the time, so I'm going to leave you with this, Mike. I hope this has been helpful, and thank you so much for sharing that with me. I want your relationship to get better. Do something to spice things up in that relationship. If you don't have friends, then you may want to go do something with her that is out of your comfort zone. Tell you what, you want to feel emotions? Go outside your comfort zone. when I was married, when my wife took me to an 80s dance, totally outside my comfort zone, I was having feelings. I did it anyway, and it was an awesome experience. Not that I had the best time, but because I was out of my comfort zone, it caused me to think differently, it caused me to act differently, and it felt like I was outside of the confines of that structure that we created. You might have to do some things like that. It'd be worth it. Check it out. Thanks for joining me today. We'll be right back, and I'll close the show. Thank you for listening to another episode of The Overwhelmed Brain. I want to thank Asha over at getoutofthemess.com. Call her at 678-355-8777 if you have any questions about this service and if it's the right service for you. She'll tell you all about it. And I want to thank the Chopra Center at chopra.com for listing The Overwhelmed Brain as one of the 6 podcasts to listen to for personal growth. That's an honor. Thank you so much. Go over to Chopra.com and click on the search field and look for podcasts, and you'll see that article, and put a comment there and tell them how much you listen to the show or don't listen to the show. Check it out. It's a great article, and it's got some suggestions for personal growth podcasts that you might find helpful. Thank you, Deepak and friends. And I also want to thank the website CalmerU.com. That's Calmer-U.com. Who suggested this podcast as one of the 8 podcasts to listen to when you're feeling anxious or worried? I'm honored. Thank you, Chloe B., for the write-up. And there's a lot of thanks today, so hang in there. I'm almost done. I want to thank iTunes reviewer Becky Sue Indy for her 5-star review of the show. It's quite a write-up. She says, I've been listening for about 2 years now. I'm so thankful for Paul and his podcast, and I've been listening to him for 2 years. I think she didn't mean to say that twice. Every show has something that I can take away and benefit from, and I eagerly await each upcoming show. She goes on and on complimenting me in the show, and thank you so much. He's taught me so many new approaches to challenging relationships, and I'm so thankful. Keep up the good work, Paul. Thank you, Becky Sue Indy. I appreciate that, and thanks for taking the time to review the show in iTunes. And I want to thank the patron members over at patron.theoverwhelmedbrain.com. It's a way to support the show. If you find value in this show, you can do the same thing. And not only that, if you do end up supporting the show through that site, patron.theoverwhelmedbrain.com, you get stuff back. I just created a new patron episode this week, and I think I have like 82 on there now. So there's all these new episodes that if you're not a member, you've never heard, and all kinds of things I talk about, and I go deeper into some subjects in the patron program. So if you want to support the show, or if you just want to get the extras like the workbooks and the worksheets that I create and all those private episodes, then head over to patron.theoverwhelmedbrain.com. And I appreciate you existing patron members. You are definitely valuable to me. And of course, I appreciate anyone that uses the Amazon link at theoverwhelmedbrain.com that helps support the show as well. And now I'm done with those thank yous. I'm going to tell you about the Mean Workbook. The Mean Workbook is for you if you have a complex relationship. You can't figure out what you're doing wrong, and the relationship just doesn't seem to be working out the way you thought. You feel like you're responsible for all the problems, or maybe they're responsible for all the problems, and you feel like that there's nothing you can do or nothing you can say to make things right. And the Mean Workbook helps to assess your relationship to figure out if there's any type of emotional abuse going on. Emotional abuse isn't just yelling at your partner and calling them names. It's very subtle. It's very insidious. And there's a lot under the surface, under your radar. So I hope you don't need this, but if you need to assess what's going on in your relationship, this is a great place to start. Go to loveandabuse.com And check out the Mean Workbook. You'll be able to tell just from the description of the Mean Workbook if it's right for you. So loveandabuse.com. Like I said, I hope you don't need it, but if you do, it's a valuable resource. And finally, there is one more thank you. Thank you to Kevin McLeod of incompetech.com for some of the music transitions in The Overwhelmed Brain. And to close the show, there's an interesting conversation going on in the Facebook group. And I don't mention this often, but yes, The Overwhelmed Brain has a Facebook group. It's called The Overwhelmed Brain Empowerment Group. And if you want to join, if you're on Facebook, go ahead and join. You have to be 18 or older. And once you're in there, there's a conversation going on right now about obsessive thoughts. And it's just starting, and I'm finding some interesting comments in there. It's really making me look at obsessive thinking in a different way. I thought it was just isolated to a few people, but apparently there's a lot of people out there that have obsessive thinking. And this is just my ignorance, my inability to read between the lines sometimes. So I'll admit that. But I didn't realize how much a lot of people obsess. I used to obsess when I was in my 20s because, you know, when my girlfriend broke up with me, I was obsessed with her. I wanted her to love me again, and I followed her around, and I would spy on her. I would do things that I'm not proud of because I was so obsessive. I couldn't get her out of my mind. And so in the Facebook group, that conversation is starting. And I think it's a great conversation to have because A, you're not alone. I mean, you see other people saying, oh my God, I obsess all the time. And so you really start connecting with those people in a way where you don't feel like you're the only one doing it. And that's where my ignorance was. My thought was that there were very few people that were that obsessive, and they were just, you know, OCD. They had something going on. Not that there's anything wrong with them, but they had something going on that was very specific to them. But it turns out it's more popular than I thought. Popular in a, you know, more infamous way. So obsessive thoughts. I have some clients that are going through this as well. What are you obsessing over, and how do you get rid of it? You know, I like what one of the posters said. He said, I had this obsessive thought over someone, and I finally stopped obsessing when they completely rejected me and said, I don't want anything to do with you, or something like that. And I thought, well, that's a great way to stop obsession. If someone says, get the hell out of my life, that might stop your obsession, because I believe that obsession, it lingers on the belief that there's a chance. When you have that thought in your mind that there's a chance that something could turn out your way, those obsessive thoughts start. So what do I do? What do I like to do? I like to stop any obsessive thoughts that I have by getting closure. Like if I'm obsessed about someone saying yes or no about something in my life, I want closure. So I'm not going to obsess about it for weeks and weeks and weeks. I'm going to call them up and ask them, hey, just give me a straight up yes or no. And then once they give me their answer, I can stop obsessing. I mean, I don't really obsess too much anymore, but that's because I seek closure as fast as possible. When you're obsessing about something, seek closure as fast as possible. I know it's difficult. I know that I'm, again, making it so sound so basic and easy. I know it's not, but I chased after a girl in my 20s and really, really wanted her back in my life. And if she stopped me and said, get the F away from me, I never want to see you again, I hate you, I would probably have closure at that point. If I kept obsessing, then that's another issue I have to look at and maybe get therapy for. But for someone to finally say, stop it, don't do it anymore, I don't want you near me, I don't want you in my life, as much as that might hurt, because it does not meet up with your hope and expectations, it can be a way to close the loop, close the obsession. And if you're being obsessed about, then you might have to be that way. You might have to be the person who closes the door, who slams it in their face, even if it's not in your nature. I don't want to hurt his feelings. I don't want to hurt her feelings. I don't want to make them think I'm a bad person. You might have to. You might have to close for their own good. You might have to close that door, slam it shut tight so that they stop obsessing over you. doesn't always work. There are people that are just madly obsessed and want you no matter what. But you got to give them signal after signal after signal. And not subtly, not in a vague way, not in an ambiguous way, but a very in-your-face, no, there'll never be a chance. No, never, never, ever. So that's one component of obsession that I'm really starting to wrap my brain around on how to stop it. And I thank the person who posted that in the Facebook group because you gave me that thought. And it reminded me of when I had the door closed on me, and it made me stop obsessing as well. It didn't happen with that particular girlfriend, but it has happened where my obsession definitely stopped when I reached full closure, knowing there was absolutely no chance. And maybe that's the component of obsession that I need to drill into more to help others get out of it, is that tiny hope that there's still a chance. How do we get that out of our mind? Yes, there's the closure part, but what if you can't get that closure? What if the other person's like wishy-washy, like, I don't know, you know, I'm still working on things, and, you know, I don't know what you're might be obsessing about, but in the example of a relationship, you're obsessing about someone and they're not giving you full closure. So now you have this open loop in your mind and you're walking around with it and you're waiting for that closure and you're not getting it. So what do you do? I still like to end things and close it myself, ask for a definitive yes or no so that I can move on with my life. And if they refuse to give it and they're still not there, then I'm going to do the hard thing and cut them out completely. I'm just going to cut them out. It's that go no contact thing. I go no contact, that's it, I'm out of here. I don't want to deal with this anymore because the other person feels like they have control over me. I don't want you to feel like someone's controlling you. So what I want you to do is just to keep an open mind so that you can step into your power, because when you're empowered, you have some control. Maybe not full control, but more control than if you were just hoping for something to happen and it never did, and you can't get rid of these obsessive thoughts and so on and so on and so on. But being empowered helps you be firm in your decisions and actions so that you can create the life you want. Always take steps to grow and evolve. You are powerful beyond measure. And above all, and this is something I absolutely know to be true about you, without a doubt, you are amazing.